today, called Yavsky v. Mukasey. Ms. Baldini-Predderman.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Maria Baldini-Predderman, and I represent Arkady Kolyovsky, the petitioner in this case. Mr. Kolyovsky is a 30-year-old Jew who entered the United States as a refugee in 1992. He later became a lawful permanent resident. His parents and his brother are naturalized U.S. citizens. Mr. Kolyovsky was subsequently convicted of several misdemeanor offenses and two felony offenses and placed in removal proceedings as a result of those convictions. In 2001, he was officially recognized as mentally disabled by the Social Security Administration, based on a combination of diagnoses of severe anxiety disorder and depression. He has been treated by Dr. Jacobson, who was accepted as an expert witness by the immigration judge since 2001.
Has that been the diagnosis throughout, severe anxiety disorder and depression?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Has that been the diagnosis throughout severe anxiety disorder and depression?
The depression has been a diagnosis from 1997 when he first sought the initial treatment for the mental illness, as both he and his parents recognized that he did have some mental issues. The diagnosis was changed as he changed different psychiatrists. As he remained under the care of Dr. Jacobson, the diagnosis went from being paranoia with anxiety disorder and depression to being severe anxiety disorder and depression. It took Dr. Jacobson, as noted in his affidavit and in his testimony, several years to find the correct combination of drugs to stabilize Mr. Kolyovsky. The two drugs for which he was able to finally get him stabilized are not available in Russia.
What are those two medications? Could you refresh my recollection?
Yes, Your Honor. Klonopin and Paxil. And we did, in the administrative record, there is a copy of the Moxibes medical drug list, which shows which drugs are available worldwide. And those two are not available in Russia. Dr. Jacobson also testified to this fact.
Is it a matter of record that you need to be followed if you're taking those medications by a physician?
Your Honor, in this case, Dr. Jacobson testified that he had been treating Mr. Kolyovsky and following him, seeing him routinely anywhere from every 2 weeks to once a month, again, over a period of years, in order to monitor the medication. Also is listed in detail in his affidavit, which was submitted with the motion to reopen in this case, was the different regimens and the different combinations of drugs that Dr. Jacobson tried in order to get Mr. Kolyovsky stabilized. In addition, it is clear from the record, from the transcript on December 22nd of 2004, in the merits hearing, before the first of part of the merits hearing before Immigration Judge Zerbe, that in part due to the fact that jail did not give him the proper medications, as well as the stress that was raised during that hearing by the conduct of the hearing, that Mr. Kolyovsky suffered a complete mental breakdown. Dr. Jacobson, at the time that Mr. Kolyovsky was supposed to start testifying, we had to take a recess. During that recess, Dr. Jacobson declared him mentally incompetent, and the judge was forced to continue the hearing for another day. Mr. Kolyovsky was then transferred to the psych ward of River's Edge Hospital here in the Chicago area, where he was given additional medications, including Haldol, which is a very potent shot, in order to get him stabilized enough so that testimony could resume on January 5th of 2005. So I believe the record reflects clearly, as well as Dr. Jacobson's testimony, that if he's separated from his family and he does not have these medications, that he will suffer an acute psychotic breakdown.
Now, Dr. Jacobson also said that your client had a character disorder. This consists of avoidant, schizoid, narcissistic personality features. That sounds like he was saying your client, I can remember cross-examining a psychiatrist once, and I asked what a character disorder was, and I remember the psychiatrist saying it says means he's a bad boy. What does it mean to have a character disorder? That's, Dr. Jacobson said that about your client.
Your Honor, as
Page 939 of the
I'm sorry.
AR 939.
Your Honor, I will address that in my rebuttal.
Sure, I appreciate it. Because as I understand it, Dr. Jacobson did leave open the possibility, or did say, in effect, that your client's situation was not entirely explained by his psychiatric condition.
As far as his criminal history, Your Honor, is that what you're referring to?
And that bothers me about your case. Mm-hmm. If you could speak to that at some point, it sure would help me.
Yes, I will, Your
Thank
Honor.
You.
Okay. Your Honor, I will address that just very briefly at this point. Most of Mr. Koyovsky's criminal history arose prior to the time at which he began his treatment with Dr. Jacobson. Most of the two misdemeanor retail theft offenses were prior to, one was in 97, I believe the other was in 99. He had a couple of misdemeanor battery offenses. The only offenses that he had were, one was committed before he started treatment with Dr. Jacobson, and that was for the burglary, which was a felony for which he ended up on probation. The other was for the possession of the counterfeit prescription forms. And as the immigration judge found, and Mr. Koyovsky had testified, the possession of the counterfeit prescription forms related to his dire concern that he'd be able to get his psychiatric medications immediately and not have to wait to see.
No evidence that he was selling the stuff on the side or
anything No evidence whatsoever, Your Honor, in the record. And the immigration judge made a very clear finding in his decision about that. He was not dealing prescription forms.
What does the record show about the cause of your client's psychiatric condition?
Dr. Jacobson's affidavit, which was submitted with the motion to reopen, refers back to the issues that Mr. Koyovsky suffered back in Russia. And specifically, if I can refer you to the finding by Dr. Jacobson at the end of the December 22nd, 2004 hearing, because I do believe that this is relevant. And I'm looking at the administrative record from pages 621 to 623. Dr. Jacobson, yes, I just talked to Arkady, and Arkady's been his psychiatric condition has been getting worse for the last month. I had called out to the detention center, Kenosha, and requested they increase his Klonopin for his panic and give him Seroquel for agitation. And I talked to the nurse, and she said she would relay that information to physician, set up an appointment for him to be seen, which indeed did happen. The problem was that the person was not a psychologist or psychiatrist and did not give him any further medication. Right now, he's in a very regressed state of mind. He's in the throes of a panic attack along with depression, which makes him feel horribly anxious. I mean, he wants to get up and run, just like everywhere would be better than here, anywhere would be better than jail. And he is sitting in the room with his hands over his head. He's crying. His eyes are markedly bloodshot, which is typical of a very progressed state. And I have to bear in mind that this is a man who was abused when he was a young boy. And he is reacting as if the system is doing this all over again, only it's a different system, and he just wants to run, and he feels totally hopeless, and he can't see any point in going on. And I don't think that a person in that frame of mind is in a capacity to represent themselves. Now, again, if you look back at the affidavits, which were uncontested by his father and his mother regarding the beatings that Mr. Koyovsky took as a child, throughout his time in school, beginning from when he was in first grade, the second grade incident when the kids yanked his pants down in the bathroom to show his circumcision and then shoved him into a toilet, the dog attack where girls deliberately sicked a German Shepherd on him, all these repeated incidents led to him, even while he was in Russia, starting to go into a type of hiding situation. He testified at the hearing that he would hide in his parents' attic instead of going to school out of fear that something else would happen to him.
So the long and short of it is that you're trying to prevent him from going back to where these things happened.
Yes, Your Honor.
Send him back to the source of this.
Yes, Your Honor. And in part, this is based on the fact that many of these incidents took place before the breakup of the Soviet Union. The breakup of the Soviet Union was in December of 2001. Additional incidents occurred after the breakup of the Soviet Union. The family initially applied for refugee status in 1989. In 2002, they were granted refugee status, and they immigrated as refugees here to the United States. So the fact that incidents of persecution occurred both before and after the breakup of the Soviet Union demonstrates that they had suffered past persecution, that Mr. Koyovsky himself had suffered past persecution. One of the large gaps in the IJ's decision, as well as both of the board's decisions, is the fact that neither the IJ nor the BIA ever addressed the other incidents of persecution, which we raised before the immigration judge through the affidavits, through the post-hearing memo, regarding the fact that the family was targeted. You cannot just cut Mr. Koyovsky out of his family and consider only these incidents that the board characterized as mere harassment by school children and by teachers. You have to also consider the incidents of persecution, which relate back to the Stars of David being carved into their mailbox, the threatening phone calls being made to their house after the fall of the Soviet Union, that the pogrom was coming, basically that the Jews were going to be eliminated, the open rise of anti-Semitism in the former Soviet Union. If you look again at the IJ's decision at the board, nowhere in those decisions do they ever mention these incidents. And again, he's part of his family, and he was a member at the time the phone calls were coming. He was residing with his family. The stars were etched where he could see them. All of these incidents that Mr. Koyovsky and his family together underwent constitute past persecution. Contrary to the board's decision and the IJ's decision that this case does not mirror or does not follow along the lines of the board's own precedent case, OZIZ, it in fact very closely tracks the case of OZIZ. In OZIZ, the son had been beaten. He had had similar incidents where he was called names. His pants had been yanked down. Very similar, they had received death threats to their house. The Koyovsky family underwent the same type of persecution. We submit, therefore, that Mr. Koyovsky has definitely proven that he suffered as an individual past persecution in Russia. Moving on to the board's other discussion regarding the claim of past persecution, the IJ and the board both found that just because he was admitted as a refugee meant that he was not entitled to any presumption of future persecution. In this particular case, the Department of Homeland Security had all the records that could have provided evidence showing that Mr. Koyovsky and his family were granted refugee status based solely on a well-founded fear of future persecution. There was no evidence submitted by the Department of Homeland Security whatsoever to rebut their testimony and their sworn affidavits about the past persecution. The board, therefore, should have applied, and the IJ should have applied, the presumption of future persecution,
so
which
you're
the
not
department.
Relying on simply on the fact, or are you relying at all on the fact that he once was classified as a refugee before he got his green card?
We're arguing both points, Your Honor.
I see. As separate, independent points.
Yes, a separate, independent. First, we're arguing that he definitely clearly met the definition of past persecution based on the incidents and the testimony and the affidavits in the record of what he as an individual underwent. Then, we're arguing that he met the definition of past persecution based on his grant of refugee status. This, again, was a case where the family had applied in 1989, prior to the fall of the Soviet Union, prior to the Lautenberg Amendment. So this is not just a case of somebody who goes in and applies because the Soviet Union has fallen and therefore they fear, well, things are going to get worse, so we're going to get out now. Again, the family had applied prior to the fall, in fact, 2 years prior to the fall of the Soviet Union. The other part of the board's decision, which I believe needs addressing, is the board's finding that the grant of lawful permanent residence automatically terminates refugee status, as well as the vestiges of refugee status that the board had referenced in its prior Smirko case, S-M-R-I-K-O. In Smirko, that was basically a case in which the board held that someone who came in as a refugee, who then adjusted status and committed offenses which rendered him or her deportable, could be placed in removal proceedings without a formal termination of refugee status, as required under the Act. In this particular case, we are not contesting whether or not Mr. Koyovsky is deportable. He is deportable. The question is whether or not the simple grant of permanent residence to Mr. Koyovsky automatically terminates any vestiges of refugee status or the definition of a refugee. This court in the Gutnick case recently made it very clear that there was a difference between refugee status for purposes of adjustment of status under 8 U.S.C. 1159A. And it also recognized in the Gutnick case that Mr. Gutnick had actually met the definition of a refugee as is defined under 8 U.S.C. 1101.42A, which is the definition of a refugee. So this court has already distinguished between these two points. In the board's reasoning, and in particular in its second decision, if you look at it, the board is saying that because he became a permanent resident, it's basically as if his entire refugee past, all his experiences, were wiped clean, as if there's going to be a complete wiping clean of the Russian government's institutional history, the Russian government's documentation showing that he actually left as a refugee. His father's affidavit goes through clearly. They had to go to Ovir and turn in the U.S. government's refugee documents in order to get their exit visas to be able to leave. There are two letters in the administrative record at pages 115 and page 837 that specifically refer to the fact the Russian government knows he's here. They've twice refused to recognize him as a citizen. And furthermore, they know he has a, quote, bad criminal history. He is known. And with that, Your Honor.
I don't want to cut you off in the middle of a sentence, but
I realize I'm into my time. Thank you.
That's right. Well, use your time, but we'll provide some rebuttal time and give you an opportunity to reflect on further on the inquiry that Judge Ripple made. All right. Thank you. Mr. Mencken.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Jeffrey L. Mencken, United States Department of Justice, for the respondent. May it please the Court. The defense in this case raises a sweeping mix of arguments, but I think the matter can be simplified quite a bit. The finding by the board and the immigration judge that Mr. Koslowski did not merit asylum in the exercise of discretion, even if he otherwise qualified, is not meaningfully challenged either brief to this court by the defense. As the panel has pointed out, the psychiatrist did say that his behavior is not something that can be explained by his psychiatric condition, and the IJ specifically found...
He said not entirely by his psychiatric condition.
Pardon me?
He said not entirely by his psychiatric condition.
Correct. And I think that the agency is entirely entitled to find that an individual's criminal history, explained partially by a psychiatric condition or not, does not entitle one to a discretionary grant of asylum. That is what the IJ found. That is what the board affirmed.
Can you help me out with something? I noticed in the record that Russia has said they're not going to accept this guy if you put him on a plane and you send him over. As a practical matter, what happens in a situation like this?
And that is not ultimately determinative because at this juncture, there's no final removal order.
Now, let's assume he's put on a plane or he's ready to be put on a plane, and Russia has simply said, we're not accepting him. He's not our citizen in our view, and we're not going to take him. What happens? It's
well,
a practical matter.
The Department of Homeland Security does not treat indications this early in the record as dispositive.
But what if?
Let's assume that at the end of this they do approach again. I would point out that a letter stating that he's not a citizen is also not dispositive. He was not ordered sent to Russia because he had been a citizen.
I understand but they said they weren't going to take him back. Let's say they persist in that view and, Aeroflot's warming up at O'Hare and you're ready to put him on it. What happens now?
Just to play out the hypothetical, Your Honor, then the statute provides for alternate designations, and that would have to be considered. But for our purposes, that is not dispositive of any claim that has been made.
So right now we're all supposed to litigate this with the understanding that he's going to Russia.
Well, that is the country of designation, and that is the responsibility of the IJ to designate a country.
I
know what brought about those letters, whether there was lobbying by the defense or what, But normally an official formal final request is not made until the order is final. And that is what my understanding the Department of Homeland Security intends to do.
Thanks.
What does the department do in cases where, as Judge Ripple has pointed out, the assumed receiving nation doesn't? What are the other factors are looked to for other points of designation? I assume this has come up before.
Oh, it comes up, I'm sure, fairly routinely. I can't cite the statutory factors by memory, but...
No, I'm really looking for the practical, right. I think Judge Ripple has a practical outcome.
You look to where the individual departed from, the country that they had come from, countries to which they may have ties, and then there's a catch-all in any country that is willing to receive them. It is not uncommon, and this court, I argued before this court a case some years ago of a Nazi war criminal who was ordered deported, and he still lives in Wisconsin. But that is not something that should concern us here as far as resolving these issues. Now, I think that the grant of discretionary asylum is dispositive as to the asylum application. The argument may be made that a reference was made to some board filing, but something that is mentioned in 2,300 pages of record does not properly preserve or present an argument here, especially when there's some indication that that reference was made to evade the 14,000-word limit. So I think we can just move on to the persecution and past and future persecution in terms of withholding, which, of course, raises a higher standard of proof, which, of course, the IJ and the board found was not met. Now, as far as the regulatory presumption of past persecution, the board was entirely correct and reasonably found that Mr. Kozlowski was not entitled to any presumptions based on his past refugee status, which he obtained derivatively in an asylum application filed by his parents.
If he hadn't gone that route, that is the derivative route, and it made application like his parents, would he be in a different procedural posture today?
Do you mean when the family originally entered?
Yeah, when the original entered.
I don't know that was even available to a minor who was accompanied by parents. But as
a minor coming in under his parents' refugee past persecution status can never get the benefit of that? Is that the situation?
Well, they do get the benefit if asylum is...
They get admitted.
They get admitted and they get the status granted to their parents. But later when that status is lost to them, they don't get the benefit of having claimed persecution derivatively.
That's lost by becoming an adult in this country.
It is in a number of ways. When Mr. Kozlowski adjusted his status, which the board found, and secondly, his criminal history has deprived him of that privilege that had been accorded to him. And I think that both the law and the regulations frown on and disapprove of the concept of derivative, the existence that you have been derivatively persecuted. But Mr. Kozlowski ultimately was not harmed because he did raise the issue of past persecution. And under the Supreme Court standard in Elias Zacharias, it's now his burden to demonstrate that the record compels a conclusion other than that found by the board.
Yeah, the shifting of the burden of proof, then. Is that it?
At this juncture, yes. We are not evaluating this record from scratch. The immigration judge has done his job, and the board has done its job. Now, as to whether the record compels a contrary conclusion, of course, I don't believe it does. There, as I said, have been exceedingly sweeping accusations about this record, but when you look beneath them, the record just does not back it up. It does not. We're not, again, inventing the wheel here.
It doesn't back it up. Why again?
It doesn't back it up because the board made a legitimate finding that the incidents that were identified, which are fairly isolated over between the ages of 7 and 15, did not rise to the level of persecution, specifically in the context of withholding of removal. Even if we put asylum back on the table, the board found that it did not meet that. Now, this court has said that It's a line-drawing issue. What is harassment and what rises to that exceedingly high level of persecution? And the agency draws that line, and I can refer
the court. You have to look at it, don't you, in terms of this particular individual? I mean, it's the old rule you have, you know, you can't shoot caveat victim here. Some people would not be harmed the way this person was harmed by those events, but there is medical testimony in this record that the cause of his mental problem is those events.
There's and, evidence. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Which seems to they characterize as unrebutted and seem, really does seem to be.
Well, there's evidence that Mr. Kozlowski told the psychiatrist that that was the cause. I don't think that the psychiatrist independently researched and investigated that. But be that as it may, there is the record shows and the board found that there is no current that the country conditions in Russia do not show a pattern of systematic abuse of Jews. The record does not show a systematic, deliberate imposition of penalties or harm against people with mental illnesses. Mr. Kozlowski did not, or the board found, I should say, that Mr. Kozlowski did not show that he could not relocate anywhere in the entire country of Russia. And the record does not compel a contrary result.
If I may interrupt there, Mr. Mencken, the IJ talked about the fact that his parents could send him the medication from the United States. Is that really realistic? I mean, is any physician in the United States going to continue to prescribe those medications for a man halfway around the world without following them?
Well, I think the IJ was, the immigration judge was talking just by way of example off the cuff. But I think his central point was that there's no proof that the medication cannot be obtained in any fashion. And there's no evidence that, that mental health care itself is absolutely unavailable to Mr. Kozlowski.
Help me out with this. This is what I reading the briefs in the case a couple of days ago, and I said, look, all I could do was picture this plane landing in Moscow. This guy gets off the plane. He's not wanted. He's a member of an ethnic group that's had problems, at least in the past. He's got a month's worth of medication in his pocket. He can't live in Moscow in all likelihood because of their permit system. What's he supposed to do at this point? He's back in where all this started.
Well, let's look at the record, Your Honor. Taking the last point, that he could not live in Moscow, that was by anecdote and supposition. There are people in Moscow today in a city of millions who don't have the permits. But the evidence that was offered was he won't be able to live in Moscow, and therefore he has to go to Siberia, which is Cold War cliche at its best.
Sure.
And I think the immigration judge was very entitled to not be controlled by that. The alien comes to court with the burden. What did he offer? And the IJ found that he didn't meet his burden, and the board found he didn't meet his burden. And looking at the record, we cannot say that the record compels the contrary conclusion. Now, to say that Mr. Kozlowski will have problems, therefore he is the burden of the United States, I don't think controls. He's had his opportunity. He had 9 convictions. In 2004, while he was under psychiatric care, he went into a store, bought fertilizer, and said, you know, this could be used to make a bomb, and the FBI was brought in.
Yeah, but there were findings made with respect to that matter. In fact, he used the fertilizer at his parents' garden, right?
Well, yes, but
the IJ did directly speak to that.
Yes, and that was not charged, and that's not in itself a conviction. But it's another drip in the bucket that supports the discretionary determination that he was not entitled to asylum. And there's absolutely no showing, and nor can an argument seriously be made on this record that the IJ abused his discretion in that regard, or the board abused its discretion. Now, one thing that I do want to address, and I see my time is running, the board never said that Mr. Kozlowski's past experiences are irrelevant because or were cleansed because he lost his refugee status. It heard his evidence. It considered his evidence. His evidence received an airing. So I don't think that the characterization is either accurate or even consequential. Now, I believe I've covered that the board's finding that there is no showing of past persecution, no showing of future persecution, even if it's assumed that all of the social groups that Mr. Kozlowski claimed to be a member of existed, that the persecution issue was not shown. It's not necessary for the court to consider the asylum application because it was denied in the as a discretionary matter. It's not necessary for the court to decide the social group issue because even assuming persecution was not proven, there's nothing in the record that compels a finding that Mr. Kozlowski more likely than not is going to be tortured. And therefore, unless the court has any other questions, we went into some great detail in our briefs. The briefs and pleadings in this case are extensive, and I would refer the court to those.
Thank you, Mr. Mackin.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Aldini Federine. Your time has expired, but you may have 2 minutes.
Your Honor, to address your question about any other evidence regarding Mr. Koyosky's propensity toward criminal activity, in the administrative record at page 118, there is a follow-up letter by Dr. Jacobson. This was submitted on remand to the board for its consideration, and it's pages 118 through 120. And in it, Dr. Jacobson clearly states that he finds that if he explains the 2004 incident, he reviews what happened at the 2004 removal proceeding where he had to declare Mr. Koyosky incompetent. And he states at the bottom of page 119, quote, I want to state this in the firmest way possible. I have treated Arkady for almost 5 years. I have never found him to be a danger to the community. That remains my assessment to this day, end quote. Now, this was a letter that was directed to Deborah Achim, dated February 6th of 2006, as part of the litigation regarding Mr. Koyosky's custody, an issue about which this court has previously issued a prior decision. As far as the government's response regarding that medical care would be allowed for Mr. Koyosky, or that he could obtain medical care in Russia, one of the immigration judge's own documents that he submitted, that he did on his own research, shows that the permit is actually required in order to obtain medical care. And I would refer this court to the administrative record, pages 851 to 853. Basically, the residence permit is still required in Moscow in order to obtain housing, medical care, or employment. As far as there being no, quote, independent evidence regarding Mr. Koyosky's past persecution, as alleged by the government, Mr. Koyosky's mother testified, uncontradicted by the government, at the hearing about the incidents of persecution. Mr. Koyosky's father's affidavit is also in evidence regarding the incidents that he suffered. So therefore, Mr. Koyosky did provide corroboration as far as his claims of persecution.
How about page 935? The character behavior disorder that I asked you about.
Yes, Your Honor.
Character disorder, I'm sorry.
And in response to that, part of my response to you was to refer you to the administrative record on remand with Dr. Jacobson's more recent letter regarding that. As far as the issues here, I could provide the court with an explanation from Dr. Jacobson if this court would so desire what he meant by that.
You want a supplemental, Ken? If it's possible, can you get a supplemental?
Well, what kind of submission would you be seeking to provide the court?
I could provide the court, Your Honor, with a letter from Dr. Jacobson as far as what he meant by that term.
I don't think we should augment the record at this time. I mean,
unless you can give us authority that says we can augment the record.
Yeah. Any augmentation of record would have to come with a some authority that would permit that, and then of course we'd have to let the government have an opportunity to challenge. Do you have any authority offhand that would allow for such a submission at this date?
No, I don't have any authority, Your Honor. I could go back. As you know, this is over 2,400-page admin record, and we had, I believe, submitted in our motion to reopen, which the judge did not consider, the actual diagnoses, and I could go back through the record, and if I find it, if you would allow me to file
if
this
wanna,
letter.
If you want to just submit something that refers to the record as it exists, you may have 10 days to do that, but I don't want to advance further argument. Mr. Mencken, if such a submission comes, the government may have 10 days to respond to such.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.